Welcome to the PrevMed Health Podcast with Dr. Brewer, your go-to source for heart attack and stroke prevention. And I am your host, Ford Brewer. Each week, we dive deep into the latest trends, expert insights, and practical tips to help you decrease your risk of heart attack and stroke. We discuss plaque reversal, insulin resistance, prediabetes, diabetes, cholesterol, supplements, medications, and so much more. So sit back, relax, and have this journey to a long and healthy life together.
Statistically, by the time guys get in their 40s, about 40% of guys have an issue with. And I say it's the canary in the coal mine because the microvasculature in the penis is very sensitive to change. I've done thousands of ultrasounds, and I have a number of patients who come in, they come find me for prevention after they've already had an event. And I'm always most interested in looking at their arteries because it's like, well, what could we have seen using CIMT that would have helped predict this happening? Anyone who sees they have plaque, we have to admit that what they're doing at that moment isn't working, and they need to find somebody who can help kind of guide them through that from a preventive standpoint to make sure that they don't suffer a heart attack or stroke.
Zach, you and Jesus and I met out in San Diego last year for the low carb conference. Tell us and the viewers a little bit about yourself, what you do.
Yeah, so I'm Zachary Lott. I'm a nurse practitioner by training. I've got a background in critical care, and that was my experience there was a big turning point in what I do. You know, I saw a lot of people admitted in the critical care arena, both in the medical side and on the cardiac side. And I had this epiphany that these people don't need to be here. And there's probably something that can be done 10, 20 years before someone even has an opportunity to get that sick. And so I started a practice that specializes in cardiometabolic disease prevention and really with a focus on not just prolonging life, but prolonging quality of life and health span.
So it took you a little bit longer, too. I've had several people on. Most recently coming to mind would be Casey Means. Uh-huh. And like to give her a hard time that it took her longer to figure out prevention was the way to go than it took me. I didn't even get through second year of med school before I started saying, oh, this is silly. We really need, this is not about improving health. This is about treating disease that's already there.
Yeah. And I think it's real important to, you know, the lens that we look at helping other people through, you know, in general, medicine seems to be very, very reactive to things and not proactive, preventing them before they're actually problematic. You know, waiting, in my opinion, waiting to treat someone until they have plaque in their arteries is a lot like saying, yeah, go ahead and keep smoking until you get lung cancer. Then we'll tell you to stop. So if we can do things much, much earlier in the game, I always look at this like a financial investment. The more that you put into it now and earlier in life, the better off you're going to be on your later years in life.
Very, very true. And you're bringing up an area that you do a lot in. And that's one of the big reasons we started talking a lot more once we met.
Yeah.
CIMTs. Tell us about what you do there. You've got a partner, the two of you do some work there.
Yeah. So the partner here is Dr. Lily Johnston. She's got a very impressive resume. She's a vascular surgeon by training, and she got tired of putting in carotid stents and doing big vascular procedures on people with an A1C of 13 who still smoked. And she wanted to get onto the prevention side of things. And so she joined the practice here last year. And we specialize in cardiometabolic disease prevention, lipidology. We do a lot of work with nutrition and a lot of the things that you can do without a prescription, as well as the things you might need a prescription for. We also focus on men's and women's health, mainly in the realm of hormone replacement therapy. And then I treat erectile dysfunction as well in men because it's another form of cardiovascular disease. I like to look at it as the canary in the coal mine for men, whereas in general medicine, people are, it's easy to go get the blue pill and call it a day. But if a man presents with erectile dysfunction, that's a big red flag that should be going up for, hey, this guy needs a cardiovascular workup. It's a sign of microvascular disease.
Yeah. So why? You mentioned ED, and I know that's what our viewers are primarily males, so I'm they're all going to be focused. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, sure. So
and why you're saying it's the canary in the coal mine.
It is the canary in the coal mine, and it's, you know, I've seen some surprising cases of ED in some rather young men as early as their mid-20s. And it's a rather prevalent disease, and it doesn't get talked about or get as much attention as it probably should, because it's an embarrassing topic to bring up. You know, statistically, by the time guys get in their 40s, about 40% of guys have an issue with it. Those are the ones who are talking about it. And I say it's the canary in the coal mine because the microvasculature in the penis is very sensitive to change. I mean, we have microvascular issues that can occur all throughout the body, whether it be in the eyes, the kidneys, the brain. But the thing that's going to get a man's attention faster than anything else is when it stops working like it used to. And usually that prompts a guy to get online and start looking for, you know, there's a lot of things on social media right now that advertise specifically for men's health and erectile dysfunction. But the biggest issue that needs to be addressed is that man needs to have his arteries looked at. I remember seeing a couple of years ago, this young man, he was in his mid-20s, and he went to two doctors and a referral to urology, and no one took this poor young man seriously. Because of his age. But when I did his CIMT test, his arterial age was 56.
And how old was he?
26 years old.
Oh my gosh, 26 years old with 56-year-old arteries. Mm-hmm. Now, when you say 56-year-old arteries, how did you gauge that?
So I did the, I'm a big fan of ultrasound. So I do the cardiorisk IMT test here. We're one of the prime centers, or we are the prime center in Southern California for the cardiorisk IMT test. And it's performed by myself and Dr. Johnston. So I did a CIMT on him, and it was worse off than I thought it was going to be. So we sent it off to CardioRisk to get a report, and they came back with his arterial age at 56. And I know your viewers are well aware of the power of the CardioRisk IMT test, and it is by far my favorite test. Everyone who comes into my clinic, even if it's a drug rep, I'm looking at their arteries because it's such an empowering thing. And even if it's just a point of care exam, we know from the CAFES CAVE study, the power of just looking at someone's carotids or their femorals in prognosticating their 10-year risk for future heart attack or stroke.
Cafe de CAVES, yep. That predicted, 98% of the heart attacks in that population of what was it?
Yeah, we're able to, just with point of care, we're able to accurately risk stratify someone into one of four buckets, and that accuracy is 98.6%.
Yeah. So when we met, I think you were basically out skinning and grinning, talking to people, and Lily was doing the CIMTs. Do you do CIMTs as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think I did all the CIMTs at that conference. We got invited out there by Low Carb USA as a vendor. We gave the opportunity for a lot of people there to get a CIMT test at a discounted rate. And I think that weekend I didn't eat for 3 days because I was so busy doing CIMT tests. Oh, yeah. It was we were cranking. I think. All in all, especially with the guests who came just to get a CIMT and people from the conference, I think we did probably 35 ultrasounds over a few days.
Well, there
and
you go.
And lots of questions. And when I do a CIMT test, you know, it's nice when a provider is able to do the CIMT test instead of a technician, because we can make a diagnosis right on the spot and have a conversation with someone. So when someone comes into our office, we like to have a little bit, they're not just coming to see a tech for 15 minutes for a scan. We like to sit down and have a conversation with people. We'll review labs if they bring them in. We'll do the ultrasound and review all the images with them. That way they know exactly what they're working with by the time they walk out of here.
Well, back to that, you said 25-year-old man with 50.
He was 26, yeah.
26-year-old man, 50-year-old?
56-year-old arteries.
Tell us a little bit more about him. So when you sat down and had that conversation with him about You did a CIMT. His arteries came back 56 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you also had some plaque in there, or was this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had plaque. Yeah, he had bilateral plaque, and it was soft too. I mean, he's
soft plaque. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, at that age, you know, someone just simply not old enough for plaque to have calcified.
Pardon the interruption, but
yeah.
for the folks that are not familiar with it, that are watching, again, just let us know what the significance of soft plaque is.
Oh, yeah. So when we look at plaque, I always look at plaque as being on a spectrum. And on one end, we've got soft plaque. On the other end, we've got calcified plaque. And there's this large spectrum in between where most people probably fall, called mixed or heterogeneous plaque. Sometimes they're closer to the soft side of the spectrum. Sometimes they're closer to the more calcified side of the spectrum. But soft plaque is the most dangerous plaque. And I'm surprised at the lack of awareness for how heart attacks and strokes actually happen. Not just by healthcare consumers, but even some healthcare providers. A really interesting statistic is most heart attacks happen in a blood vessel that's less than 50% blocked. And so I think the number is 68% of MIs occur in a blood vessel less than 50% stenosed. And how that actually happened is plaque doesn't get so big that it blocks off blood flow in the artery. What happens is plaque gets inflamed, and it ruptures, just like an angry pimple would rupture. And the body can chemically sense the injury to the endothelium and says, uh-oh, we got a problem here. Let's make a blood clot to prevent it from getting worse. And it's that thrombotic event or that blood clot that stops the flow of blood downstream, starving the heart muscle tissue for oxygen. And that's how a heart attack happens. That happens north up into the brain. That's how 70% of strokes happen.
So you mentioned 50%, less than 50% blocked. Is there something magical about 50%?
There is. It's enough plaque for there to be an issue if plaque ruptures. But one interesting correlation that I've seen, because I order a lot of Clearly tests as well, and I've come to take small changes on the CIMT test, on the ultrasound, very, very seriously. There's data to support this too, because when we see plaque in the carotids, we're likely to have more in the femorals and even more in the coronary arteries. And I've got a couple cases that I've had just over the last 2 weeks where one guy, he was 41, the other guy was in his early 50s. Both of them had a single 1.3 millimeter plaque in the carotid artery. Both of them subsequently went for a Clearly scan, and both of them had multiple areas of stenosis, 40 to 60% in their coronary arteries. And how I rationalize through this when I'm doing a point of care exam or reviewing, which doesn't get called plaque, but it's significant enough to that if you were to have that same size atheroma in a coronary artery, you're looking at close to 50% stenosis. And where it comes down to is, well, how big are the coronary arteries? Because a 1.2 millimeter area of thickening doesn't look very big in a 9, 10 millimeter carotid artery. But when we consider the internal diameter of the LAD, you're looking at 2.5 millimeters, maybe 3 in someone who's got really large vessels. So it doesn't take very much thickening to have a significant disease burden in the coronary arteries.
That's a good point. And one of the key things to think about is that at 50%, that's when you first start to get a positive stress test. And so how many stress tests are done for every CIMT?
You know, I don't refer for a lot of stress tests. I do if there's a question of, say, someone has exertional chest pain, we're getting a stress test. If someone has no symptoms, I always ask someone, can you work out hard or have sex and have no chest pain? If the answer is no, the difference between the Clearly and the CIMT test probably isn't going to change management. But in some people with an overabundance of caution, we'll go for a stress test, but the U.S. Preventative Service Task Force doesn't advise us against stress tests in a lot of cases where they're routinely done.
Pardon me for jumping in there, but I wrote,
please, because I want your input.
I wrote a book on that. It's called Why a Stress Test Can't Predict Your Heart Attack. Uh-huh. And we knew this decades ago. The American Boards of Internal Medicine, Cardiology have all been saying, guys, you're doing way too many stress tests. In fact, probably at least half of them really don't have a reason to be done.
Right.
And so, I mean, when I was asking you about what portion are being done, or what portion of stress tests, I was actually referring to the rest of the world, the big world. So even after it was really clear that, well, here's the reaction, the stress tests did not predict heart attacks.
Right.
They have not been predicting them. They're just reasonable. You know, you have an uncle that you look like and he has a heart attack and you think, oh, you know what? Maybe I'm at risk too. Hey, doc, why don't we get a stress test? And the doc's obviously going to do it. Bottom line is it doesn't predict. And it's sort of like what happened to Tim Russert.
Mm-hmm.
He got his, you know, he was feeling bad. So he gained a little bit more weight, went to see his doc, had a normal stress test, and then died from a heart attack a few weeks later. And
yep.
Most people know that kind of thing. And they think that we really can't predict it. So the problem is, so how did the medical community respond to all of that? The incontrovertible evidence, they doubled, tripled, and quadrupled the number of stress tests that they were doing. So,
yeah. And I think the most unfortunate part is, if someone passes a stress test, it's a real, real false sense of security.
Yeah.
And I even look at the calcium score in a similar manner, especially in men under 50 and women under 65. It can be a false sense of security. There's data that shows that men under 50 and women under 65, the calcium score misses about 80 to 85% of disease. And that's why I put so much stock in the CIMT test and even just point of care ultrasound, because it's fast. Within a few seconds, I can see if someone's got plaque, and I can see, is it soft, is it calcified, or is it heterogeneous? And that's a much quicker way to, and much more accurate way to risk stratify someone right on the spot, you know, especially when we compare that to a lot of the common risk calculators used in medicine. I don't think anything compares to the prognostic value of an ultrasound.
So true. So to your point about even calcium score missing it, I think you and I both would agree, rather than get a stress test, get a CIMT first and or a
100%
CT angiogram with AI analysis.
Yep.
Calcium score, I'd still rather see somebody come in with a calcium score than a stress test.
Agreed.
But the point is, it misses all the soft plaque.
Yep.
And those of us who deal with CIMT, like yourself, are really clear. You can have plaque, but it all be soft and totally miss it on calcium score. I mean, it was, 5 years ago now, the American College, what was it? One of the standards committees for cardiology,
mm-hmm,
said, okay, if you've got a negative, they got this point about not using statins unless you had plaque. And they said, okay, if you've got a negative stress test, you don't need a statin. they got it half right, unfortunately. And then there was, you know, the community like that you and I are in, where we actually study plaque. We look at it. You do see things like CIMTs. You realize, oh, you may not want to do that. In fact, you don't want to do that. And sure enough, there's been studies showing that people with a negative calcium score are getting a heart attack.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, I've seen multiple patients over the years. I've been doing ultrasound for about 10 years, and I've had multiple cases, and it's usually a guy, he's in his late 40s, early 50s, and he says, I got a zero calcium score. My cardiologist told me I'm in the lowest risk for having a heart attack in the next 10 years. And I say, okay, that might be a true statement based off of the information that we had, But I look at disease, playing disease detective, like you got to ask the right questions or do the right tests to get the best answer. And calcium score is not the best answer, especially in a guy that age. And I've had multiple cases where the guy comes in a zero calcium score and laden. His carotids are just burdened with lots of soft plaque. And so he might go from, you know, his perception, he was in the lowest risk. Now he goes into a much higher risk tier, right on the spot. And it's a shocking thing, because there's a lot of, you know, when people have that sort of C discordance that they get from different healthcare providers, it's confusing for them. Because they get told by someone of authority, like, hey, you're low risk because of this calcium score. But from a consumer standpoint, not everybody knows the best approach to take for evaluating their own risk.
So you've mentioned ultrasound a couple of times, and you've tended to use CIMT and ultrasound interchangeably.
Yeah.
So what will happen is we'll often get a patient that comes to us and they've got an ultrasound.
The duplex.
What's that?
The duplex.
Yeah, they've got an ultrasound. They don't have a CIMT. So take a minute and explain that, if you would.
Sure. Yeah. So I do point of care ultrasound on everyone who comes in my office the first time I meet them. Because it's, and I'm looking for the mere presence of plaque, because that's going to move the needle in my decision-making more than anything else, regardless what their labs show. And I have an interesting case I want to tell you about here next. Ultrasound in general has a lot of capabilities. And as it pertains to the carotid arteries, there's two main ultrasounds that get performed. And the one that's done most commonly that is much less useful is called a carotid duplex. And a carotid duplex, it has its place in evaluating patients, but not as it pertains to prognosticating their risk for a heart attack or stroke. The carotid duplex is a simple study of blood flow to the brain. And you'll see degrees of stenosis 20, 30% that get called normal on a duplex because it's not flow restrictive. And that's a real important thing to differentiate. And when we do a CIMT test, we go through a very precise protocol using the Bond method. And we take 18 images at least, and we're looking at the carotid arteries from multiple different angles. So the first part of the exam, we look at three different angles of the carotid artery, from the front about 45 degrees and more from the back side of the neck. And we're imaging the back wall of the carotid artery with a very, very high degree of precision. And in each of those images, so we've got six images total, three from each side, cardio risk, they'll take 100 measurements in each one of those images. So we have 600 measurements total that give us the average thickness of the lining of the blood vessels. Now, I always have to give a shout out to Dr. Todd Eldridge from Cardio Risk for the work that he's done in precision and reproducibility for his exams. And this is what I tell people why I like this test so much over time is if we see even a real small change from baseline, say 200ths of a millimeter is the standard for cardio risk. Out of our office, it's 100th of a millimeter. We see that much of a change over any period of time, 3, 6, 12 months. We know that that is statistically significant for actual real change in the lining of the blood vessels. And that's very, very powerful information. And that's one of the things that drives my clinical decision making, especially as it pertains to lipids. Now, I think an important side note that is not always well understood is cardiovascular disease is not a cholesterol disease. It's an inflammatory condition in the artery wall. And when we build plaque, cholesterol is just one of many ingredients. We probably blame our immune system as much as we can cholesterol. But I always make the analogy, building a plaque in the arteries is a lot like baking a cake. And flour is the main ingredient in a cake. I look at cholesterol like the flour. But you can't just make a cake with flour. But sometimes we can change how big that cake might be depending on the ingredients that we use. But the primary driving forces are inflammatory issues and blood glucose issues. And so those are oftentimes the underlying root cause, because when I do an ultrasound on someone, yeah, we get all the measurements for the CIMT to get that very precise number. But I tell people the most important thing that you find on that very first exam, it's really answering that qualitative question, yes or no, do you have plaque in your arteries? Because that's the most predictive. And then once we have a baseline, we repeat that usually in 12 months, and we look at the change in the IMT value. Is it going up? Is it going down? Or is it static? If it's going up, at what rate is it going up? Because all these pieces of information tell us something about, are the things we're doing working? And if someone's arteries are thickening too quickly, then maybe they need a little bit more attention in one risk area than the other. And that's how I really modulate lipids pharmacologically, is what's someone's IMT doing over time, and what's their inflammatory status like? What's their nutrition and their insulin resistance state like, as measured by a 2-hour oral glucose with insulin response? And that part's important. So there's a lot more power and a lot more data in the CIMT test as far as what does your risk look like day one when you come in at your baseline. I evaluate risk primarily off of plaque, and if the IMT is visibly overly thickened, that can provide just as much risk for a heart attack in the next 10 years as plaque does. And then over time, we look at what's the change like in that IMT value, because that gives us so much information. Because if you line, I always tell people, if you line 10 people up with the same exact lab values and you compare that to what their IMT is doing over time, everyone's going to respond a little bit differently for a lot of reasons that we can't always measure in a lab. And so I think it's real important to use that real hard data to help individualize therapy for people.
Yeah. You know, I have to tell you, great conversation. And it reminds me of the whole purpose. You mentioned the whole purpose for CIMT versus ultrasound. You mentioned early on with ultrasounds, you can see like 20, 30% blockage, and they're not really noticing it because it didn't impact flow.
Right.
You know, that we used that term 50% a few minutes ago. There's a reason that stress tests only click off or only show positive at 50% and above. Mm-hmm. That's when it starts to impact flow of blood.
Right.
So the same thing, the ultrasound only, the duplex that you talked about, the carotid duplex shows 50% or more. That's when they start reacting because they're looking for flow. It's what Brad and Amy, for example, Brad Bale, would call a flow study.
Mm-hmm.
And, so the whole significance of the CAFE to CAVE study was this. We knew the people that had zero plaque had very little risk.
Right.
And we knew the people that had plaque to the extent that it was impending flow had a whole lot of risk.
Yeah.
What they showed at the CAFE to CAVE was, you know, these people that have plaque, but it's not enough to impact flow. What about those folks?
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned it before, you know, it's the folks like Tim Russert, you know, I've already mentioned him a couple of times. The people that have enough plaque to show up on this CIMT, but not enough plaque to have a positive flow study, greatly outnumber the people that have 50% or more.
Yeah.
And they have very, very significant risk. So that's what we're looking for, that you're only getting the tip of the iceberg of people that have risk. And if you're wanting to actually prevent that heart attack or stroke or erectile dysfunction or blindness or kidney disease, then go back and start looking for the part of the iceberg that's under the water. All of those people that have plaque, but it's not enough plaque to impact blood flow yet.
Right.
Zach, you know, you bring up some really good points, and I have to tell you, I'm an old fart. Maybe I don't have to tell you that. I don't have to tell people that. That's one of the things that I am on the show. And here's a place where that's an issue. So CT angiogram with AI, really, you know, it took the medical world by storm. I was obviously in this space, mostly getting CIMTs. And as it continued to develop, I was one of the later ones to adapt it. Now I find myself using that a lot, but I don't use it all the time. And we have a lot of folks that are very familiar with CIMT, calcium score, and CT angiogram with AI. That watch this channel.
Sure.
Can you take a few steps back, go up about 30,000 feet and say, okay, when would you do each of those three items?
Yeah, that's a good question. So just to get clarification, for the three items, you're talking about a CTA with AI, a CIMT test, and what would the third be?
Calcium score.
Oh, calcium score. Thank you. So I'll start with the calcium score. I almost never order calcium scores. I can probably maybe one a year for the last 10 years because I don't see the need for it if I already have the information that I got from a CIMT test, because it's not going to change management. If anything, if that calcium score comes back at zero, it's a false sense of security and is discordant information for the consumer. Now, the CIMT test, if I was medical czar of the world for a day, I would mandate this screening by age 25. And that might seem really young to a lot of the viewers on the show. But the thing with cardiovascular disease, in most cases, it's inevitable. If we live long enough, we're going to get some evidence of it in our body. And I'm biased in when I make my recommendations of when to start screening by the patients whom I've seen. One of my areas of expertise is lipidology, and I deal with a lot of genetic sorts of lipid issues, lots of lipoprotein little a. And since it runs in families, the whole family usually ends up in the office at some point. And I've imaged arteries as young as 13 years old. And I commonly see 18 and 19 year olds within arterial age, at least 10 years greater. And we see early IMT thickening with, granulation in the subendothelial space in teenagers. And this is evidence that this disease starts really, really early. One of my favorite textbooks behind me is a textbook by Starry, and it shows, there's a lot of autopsy and looking, using the microscope to look and see what do people's arteries look like who just happened to die because they died. And we know that this disease starts really young, sometimes in childhood years, teenage years. But for most people, by the time they're 30, if you're going to get it, it's got a foothold in your arteries already. And in the fourth and fifth decade in life is when it really progresses. So I would say by 25, I would say get a CIMT test, most especially if you've got a family history of cardiovascular disease. So the earliest that someone is willing to come in and get a scan, the better. Just because it gives us so much information so much earlier in life than even a blood test might. But I gave a talk recently on CIMT tests for an organization in Orange County with a bunch of integrative health practitioners, and I have a big list of things or conditions or cases where screening is warranted in a patient, and the last bullet point on there is any adult with a pulse. And so I'm really, really biased and think that everyone should get this test. I think from a value standpoint, I think getting a CIMT test is the best money someone can spend on their health from a screening perspective. And if there's a family history, whether that be a family history of heart attack, stroke, diabetes, neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and dementia, vascular dementia, those are all things that warrant earlier screening with a CIMT test. And I often have patients of mine ask me, hey, how old should my kid be when I bring them in to get a test? And my answer is usually when they're old enough to really take it to heart and maybe do something about it. And in younger individuals, the primary approach is everything you can do without a prescription. You know, there's so many things that get neglected from a nutrition standpoint, an exercise standpoint, a sleep standpoint that have bigger implications on metabolic health than any drug you could prescribe to somebody. And on the metabolic health component, I look at metabolic disease like a burning fire. And if taking medications, regardless of the name of the medication, taking a medication is like dumping water on that fire. But that fire is never going out unless we cut the fuel source, because, you know, pounding candy bars and ice cream is like pouring straight gasoline on the fire. So we have to start, especially in younger individuals, education with what are the right habits to have throughout your life to prevent this from really getting you, especially if there's a family history. So that was a long-winded answer to say when to get a CIMT test. I would say as early as you're willing to, and as early as you're willing to do something about it. For some people, that's at 20. For some people, they don't take their health seriously till they're in their 50s, sometimes 60s. And then it's a lot different approach, because again, I'll go back to my investing analogy. If you start investing in your 20s, your future is gonna be a lot easier, and you're not gonna have to go as hard. But if you don't start investing until you're 50 or 60, it looks a little bit different from a how much work do we have to put in now standpoint. Now, as far as the go ahead.
As we discuss, I'm reminded of a couple of things when you bring that up. One is how early, as we discussed earlier, you see differences between boys and girls as early as 9 and 10 years old. It's clearly before the teenage years. The other thing that comes to my mind is the statistic that by the time we're age 18, everybody 18 and above on the NHANES, the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, over 50% probability of having metabolic disease, not as measured by a very sensitive thing like OGTT and insulin response, but just plain old simple A1C. So this problem is very, very young. And I couldn't agree with you more. If you can find this on a 10-year-old, even if it's not getting that 10-year-old's attention early on, hopefully it's going to get their parents' attention. And they need to know. I mean, this is their kid.
Yep. Yeah. And I take care of so many families, and it's usually dad who's got an issue and wants to bring his kid in, boy or girl. And I think the youngest person I've ever imaged was a 13-year-old male. And he had early signs of subendothelial granulation, which we know that starts to increase risk.
Mm-hmm.
There's some other interesting pieces that I've seen just anecdotally. I've done thousands of ultrasounds, but I probably do 50 a month for a report. So I get a lot of experience just looking at the screen and seeing these things. And I have a number of patients who come in, they come find me for prevention after they've already had an event. And I'm always most interested in looking at their arteries, because it's like, well, what could we have seen using CIMT that would have helped predict this happening? And it's interesting. Over time, what I've observed is women and diabetics, for some reason, it seems like plaque lays down a little bit differently. Now, it seems to be more of a microvascular thing. Now, this is just purely anecdotal observation. But what I've seen in a number of people who previously have had heart attacks is you might not see carotid plaque at all. But what you will see is an inconsistency in thickness in the IMT. And we can demonstrate that on the CIMT report as a difference between the mean and the max. So I always describe it as it looks like a bumpy road, not a laser sharp straight line. And then the other thing that we see, I'll refer to them as fatty streaks. It'll be a longer section of thickening, usually in the bulb or the internal carotid artery, of maybe 1 millimeter. And it's not enough to classify it as plaque, but that also, I've seen that in a number of people who've previously had heart attacks. Now, if I'm doing an ultrasound, or a CIMT test to be more specific, and I see that sort of picture of mean max difference or the bumpy road on the IMT and some fatty streaks or longer sections of thickening, I'll go right and image the femoral arteries as well. As we know, based off of some of the data, that we're likely to have a higher atherosclerotic burden in the femoral arteries. And I find that to be true anecdotally as well. So that's always my reflex is if it just smells metabolic to me, I'm going right to the femorals if I don't see plaque in the carotids. Now, why I think that's go ahead.
Why do you do that?
Well, the most important thing and one of the most prognostic pieces of information that I can get is really answering that qualitative question, yes or no, do you have plaque? Because if we find plaque in someone, that changes management immediately. And I don't care what the labs look like at that point. If you've got plaque, we're dealing with an inflammatory issue in the artery wall and we have to go after that. And that reminds me of a patient that I wanted to tell you about. It was a really interesting case. This man was referred to me by his primary care provider because no one could figure out why he kept having heart attacks. Now, he was in his early 70s. He had a four-way bypass and six stent procedures. But when you go and look at his lipids, not on medication, he had an LDL cholesterol of 34 and his ApoB was 45. Which is a really interesting picture, and it confused a lot of people. But so I ordered some labs on him. We looked at his metabolic health, and I make that assessment through OGTT with insulin response. And I really rely on lipoprotein fractionation, but I'm partial to NMR over ion mobility because it gives us a solid HDL particle number, and it gives us a VLDL particle number as well. And that's where sometimes you'll catch where insulin resistance hides is in the HDL particle number and in the VLDL particle size. Especially if you haven't been able to do an oral glucose yet. And so when we look at the HDL particle number, this is one of the things that I see respond to changes in metabolic health and wellness. Usually before a lot of other things will start to change, especially in the standard screening labs. But you'll very commonly see a high small LDL particle number, or if you just look at the particle size measured in nanometers. And then you look at the HDL particle number, and this is the biggest reason why I like NMR. The HDL particle number moves right along with other changes in metabolic health, whether we're talking about uric acid, whether we're talking about the glucose test, whether we're talking about fasting insulin. The ALT is a very helpful marker. But when we reverse metabolic disease, which this is my favorite part about doing what we do, is you get to see disease reverse. Not only can we see regression in the CIMT test and essentially reversing arterial age, and I've got people who have taken 30 years off of their arterial age, which is really cool. But when we see metabolic disease reverse, it's like everything in that NMR in the lipoprotein fractionation, looking at particle size, goes from mostly red and it flips like a switch from one appointment to the other to all green. And the HDL particle number goes way up. Yeah. And back to that patient who I was referring to, he didn't have a lipid problem, but what it turned out being, and this is another real interesting point of discussion that I get overly excited about, is he had an inflammatory issue driven by a dental infection, and he had a secret sweet tooth and profound insulin resistance. And I think it's a really good demonstration of this isn't a cholesterol disease. Cholesterol is just one of many ingredients in the whole process, and we have to look at it through a little bit different lens as far as impacting and even reversing it.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to segue into, well, when might we do a CTA with
the exact
AI?
Exactly where I was going. Now that CTA with AI has come of age, and it's clearly ready for prime time. Ah, pardon the pun.
Clearly.
Yeah. So it's ready for prime time now. Now, so then the question comes up, well, do you get one every year? Do you get one on everybody? When do you recommend those in your practice?
So for me to make a recommendation for it, I consider a lot of different things. I consider, will this change any management, regardless what the results say? And there's a cost burden. So that has to be considered as well. And so if I have someone who, I'll give you an example of a patient. I had a patient who, he was a patient at a well-known healthcare facility where he had a stress test, and they told him he had a 90% stenosis and he needed to get a stent. And he didn't want to have a foreign body in his coronary artery. And I agreed with him, this, we haven't asked all the right questions to determine that you indeed have a 90% stenosis anywhere. And so we did a CIMT test on him. It was helpful in initiating treatment. And then from there, I referred him for CT angiogram with AI. And he didn't want to get a stent. He really wanted to pursue the optimal medical therapy route. And I wanted to help support that in a safe manner. So when we did the Clearly on him, he had his highest degree of stenosis was 67% in his proximal LAD. And this poor man was scared to death that he was a ticking time bomb, and he stopped working out. He changed a lot of things in his life because of the fear that was instilled in him from the stress test. Now, 68% stenosis, that does carry risk, but it wasn't 90%, and he wasn't symptomatic, and I don't think he needed to have an invasive procedure. And so we've been doing optimal medical therapy on him. And in the first year, we've already seen regression in his IMT. And he's stent free. He's been working out harder than he ever has in his life. He's feeling great. His sex life is great. His social life is great. His energy levels are better than they ever have been. But it was a really good case where there's a lot there. There was utility there in getting a CT angiogram.
Now, so one of the key indications I'm hearing now is clearly before, again, here comes that word. Yeah. So definitely before you get a stent.
Outside of obvious safety issues, I think it's a good idea if someone's on the fence, if they're in a watch and wait sort of situation. I think it's definitely something that would help change management recommendations.
Yeah. And if you say, okay, stents probably don't prevent heart attacks or stents.
Oh, we know that they don't, thanks to the COURAGE trial.
And the ischemia trial and
yep,
a couple of others. So to that point, so if you're having a heart attack and they need to do a stent for that, that saves lives. This is not,
absolutely,
this is not talking about we're talking about a preventive stent here. So
right.
Definitely before you get a preventive stent, get a CTA. How about any other indications?
There are. And sometimes this is a real open discussion that I like to have with patients. And I'm very, very candid with them. And I will tell them, especially if they ask about getting the test, I will tell them this will not change what I'm asking you to do. But if it helps you buy in to what we're doing and get with the program and make the changes and have the discipline necessary to change the things in your life that are worsening this disease, then let's get the test. If you will sleep better at night, knowing what your coronary artery status is like, I will order the test as long as you understand it's not going to change a single thing I tell you. And I tell them it's novel information at this point because it's not going to change management. And if they're paying, since they're paying cash for it, I will order the test in those circumstances. But I always like to think about, will the information that we get from this test, will it change how we're going to approach this disease? And for some people that have a greater atherosclerotic burden, and I've seen 40 and 50 to 60% stenosis in men in their early 40s, that's when maybe a follow-up CTA is warranted from a monitoring standpoint. some of the coolest things about that CT angiogram with AI is not only does it show us calcified plaque, it gives us a calcium score, it shows soft plaque, and it shows low density non-calcified plaque, which that's the old cat in the gutter that we're trying to go after. And you can shut that stuff right down with proper treatment. And then we can, not only can we use CIMT, which is, that's my favorite way to monitor people because of its high degree of precision, reproducibility, as well as it's very affordable. But CT angio can also be used for monitoring if we're using AI.
So I just got my own. I got it this past December. We had some challenges on getting the analysis done, but we got it done. And Jesus was very nervous about it. And I said, why are you so nervous? He said, well, look, you've got a channel where people are watching you, and you're supposed to have cleaned up your plaque. What if it turns out you got a whole bunch of soft plaque? And I said, well, you know, that just adds more drama to the story.
That's right. And it's one of those things. It's like, you know, I take care of a lot of business owners, and I tell them, look, it's just like checking your bank account before you run payroll. You got to do it. You got to know where you're at before you take your next steps.
But it turns out that I had, I think it was 0.1% of my plaque was non-calcified soft plaque.
Great. That's great.
So we were all excited about that. And yeah. Jesus felt like you still had a reliable employer.
You know, I had one patient, about 18 months ago now. Young guy, he was 40. He was another one that was referred by his PCP to me for better risk stratification, and did the CIMT test on him. Right side looked fine. On the left side, he had about a 70% stenosis in his left bulb moving into his left internal carotid artery. It was an impressive plaque, and treated him pretty aggressively. And when we did his year follow-up, I was impressed by the results that we saw. There was about a 12-13% reduction in the plaque measurement and marked increase in calcification, which to be able to see that in, I think it was 14 months from 1 to 2, that's impressive to see in about a year, to see that much of a decrease in atheroma volume as well as the increase in calcification.
Yeah, I get our most popular videos in the past have been where I reported my own experience. That went from an arterial age of 73 back to about 57. And a lot of folks said, you know, I'd get a lot of feedback, and I knew I was going to be called a quack. And yeah, I was, but not nearly as often as I thought.
Sure.
And people were saying, I mean, it's interesting. I run into cardiologists, and a whole bunch of them these days are much more familiar with CIMT, much more familiar with the reality that, it's not just me. It's like the head of cardiology at Harvard and other folks saying, clearly we have seen, there I go with that name again. We have seen plaque reversal. It happens. It's not. And for me, you know, given the depth and detail that we've looked at it, I don't think it's LDL getting pulled back out. I think it's inflammatory cells, cytokines, inflammatory liquid getting pulled back out of that snot, that inflammation.
Yeah. You know, I have terrible genetics for cardiovascular disease. I'm almost 44. I started imaging my arteries in my early 30s, and I had plaque then. And this was before I really understood the disease well. But in my family tree, there's APOE4, there's LP little a, and I have genetic confirmed FH. And even before, you know, I'm on a handful of medications, but even before, so I'm on Repatha. It's one of my favorite drugs. Before I went to Repatha, I was on 3 oral medications with an LDL sitting at 180. Mm. And when I started imaging my arteries and keeping track of them, I had a 2.6 millimeter atheroma in my left bulb and a 2.4 millimeter atheroma in my right bulb. And after 5 years of treatment, actually, the week before I saw you at the low carb conference, I imaged my arteries again. And now I'm sitting at 1.2 and 1.1 millimeters. And I need to get another a repeat cardio risk IMT test. I need to have Dr. Johnson do one on me. Just so, because I want to frame those and put them on my wall here in my office. And it's not very often that I talk about my own personal journey in this. But it's good data to be able to show, hey, look, this is what we can do when we address things from a metabolic inflammatory standpoint. Cholesterol is still important. It's just not as important as I think general medicine will lead you to believe.
I have to tell you, Zach, I'd love to have you come back on the channel and tell that story when you get that information.
Yeah. 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 That way we can put them up on the screen and show them side by side. Cause it's impressive changes. And I've got multiple patients. I've got one gentleman, he's 68 now. I've been working with him for probably 7 or 8 years. And his arterial age at his last exam was 33 years old. And I mean, we've carved more than 3 decades off of his arterial age as measured by CIMT. And this guy, he looks 10 years younger now than when I met him maybe seven or eight years ago. When we address, I think one of the most important things is, you know, the big focus is cardiovascular disease, because statistically that's the thing that's going to kill more people than anything else. But when we look at other chronic diseases that are driven by metabolic disease, if we reduce someone's chance of having a heart attack and stroke, we're probably also reducing likelihood for cancer, neurodegenerative disease, and a whole bunch of other things, not to mention hypertension, weight loss, improved uric acid, no more gout, improved quality of life. I mean, there's...
ED, blindness, kidney.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stroke.
Yeah. And I think... You know, medicine in general is so compartmentalized. You know, you got a doctor for your brain, a doctor for your heart, a doctor for your kidneys, and not very many people do a good job about putting all the pieces of the puzzle together and looking at, hey, this is a whole person. And the one of the most impactful pieces of information that I've been able to help people with is, and it surprises healthcare providers and patients when I talk about this, but oral health.
Yeah.
It is absolutely profound. And I'll tell you, probably 5 or 6 times a month, I find someone with a subclinical dental abscess and send them off to a dentist whom I trust. Her name's Dina Liu. She's got a dental degree and a medical degree, and she's got all the proper imaging equipment in her office to pick these things up and then get them treated. But in some patients, we don't see their IMT start to reverse until we fix that underlying inflammatory issue. And I'm shocked at how often it's a dental issue. And I pick these up just by watching all the inflammatory markers. The ones that move the quickest with dental disease that I've observed is C-reactive protein and fibrinogen. Sometimes we'll get an LPPLA2 that goes sky high when lipids are normal. And then the myeloperoxidase plays a role there with the infection as well.
So, we're getting pushed for time.
Sure.
Anything from your perspective, any last comments for our audience specific to cardiovascular disease?
Yeah, I think the most empowering piece of information that I think I would want to leave all of yours with is don't just wonder and don't trust your labs. Get a CIMT test so you know exactly where you stand. It is, I always tell people the CIMT test is the great equalizer, because you can have perfect looking labs, but a 40% stenosis in the left side of your neck and you won't know it. Cardiovascular disease, not only is it inevitable, but it's very insidious. You don't know it. You don't feel it. You don't feel bad because you have it until it really gets you and plaque ruptures and you have a heart attack or a stroke. But knowing that information, getting a CIMT test, knowing where you stand from a plaque status standpoint and arterial age standpoint is going to be one of the most empowering things to help guide what you do moving forward. And I think in anyone who sees they have plaque, they have to be able to admit that even if something that they're doing, they think that they're doing something healthy, we have to admit that what they're doing at that moment isn't working, and they need to find somebody who can help kind of guide them through that from a preventive standpoint to make sure that that they don't suffer a heart attack or stroke or later on neurodegenerative disease.
We live in a world where we think that it's inevitable that we hit our 60s and, you know what, we could have a heart attack and die. Half the people that have a heart attack do die, and you just can't prevent right. that. And unfortunately, well, here's the opportunity. I mean, it's on the one hand, growing old is not for sissies, but on the other hand, it's never too late. There are right. things we can do. And absolutely. As you pointed out, if somebody goes ahead and gets a CIMT, I mean, you get a CIMT and it's clean, you're not at risk for heart attack and stroke. You get a CIMT and you've got soft plaque, you're very much at risk, and you got stuff you need to do.
Yeah.
You get a CIMT and you've got plaque and it's stable, you're not at that kind of risk. I mean,
right.
we've seen that already with the evidence. So
right.
It's never too late. You just need to test, don't guess, and you'll know what you need to do next.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Dr. Brewer. It's been a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. We hope you found today's episode informative and useful. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on all our latest episodes. For more information about becoming a patient or participating in our exclusive events, visit PrevMedHealth.com or call 859-721-1414.